thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I am Wole. Here my boy Will T. I'm cueing him in right now. What's up, Will T? Will T.
My bad, I had it on mute. Yeah, how you doing, sir? I'm good.
All right, good, man. You had me scared, like I lost connection or something. All right, we got Ray Jeezy. Ray Jeezy's out for the show. Subscribe to our Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, join our new Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. Will, we got a busy show, but let's get right into it, man. What you got to say?
Let's get into our tradition of pregame.
My man. All right, here's what we have on tap. As part of our PG Baller series, we will have PG basketball legend DeMar Johnson on the show at 8:25. We'll discuss Drew Brees' apology and his recent comments regarding kneeling during the anthem. Let's see. Also, at 8:35, we'll talk about the restart of the NBA season. Finally, at 8:50, we'll discuss the possibility of HBCUs landing top high school basketball recruits. But first, right now, we have PG basketball legend and NBA baller DeMar Johnson, a.k.a. DJ, on the show. What's going on, DJ?
Not much, man. Just trying to stay safe through all this.
Man, how you doing? How's the family?
I'm good. Everybody good, man. How about you?
Everybody good, man. Just making sure everybody's safe. You know what I'm saying? So, man, we appreciate having you on the show, my man. DJ, you were featured in Katie's PG basketball documentary, Basketball County in the Water. Did you think the documentary achieved its goal and purpose? I'm sorry. Did you think the documentary Basketball County, did it achieve its goal and purpose?
Yeah, I think so. It got a lot of people talking, and it gave a lot of people awareness of what's going on in our county. Mm-hmm. I do think some people felt slighted, that felt like, you know, they didn't come a lot, mm-hmm. and they weren't mentioned. And it's hard to do it in one hour episode with so many guys that come from PG County.
That was the thing for me, because so much hooping in this area, right? You know what I mean? And I'm glad that it's finally getting the attention. I think from my vantage point, I'm happy that we got the attention. You know what I'm saying? I think it achieved its goal because people are now talking, even in New York City and L.A., now they're talking about, oh, you know what? This area, this county had a bunch of ballers.
All right. What I would say was, at the end, at least run on a list, mm-hmm. of all the guys and like put like their college or like what pro team they played on, mm-hmm. at least, so you know, because it's a lot more than what they put there.
Definitely. Hey, Will, you got a question?
So first of all, thanks, DJ, for jumping on with us. I know you're incredibly busy, and we just appreciate it that you decided to join the show this week. I did have one question for you. If there was one, I guess, subject matter or period of time that they could have touched on within basketball in Prince George's County that they could have expounded on, what do you think that should have been?
I guess after 99 is, mm-hmm. we had me, but I guess everybody wasn't from PG County. I was in the guy. Mm-hmm. But as far as the area total, from we won then in Vegas, and you know, and we were, but from then on, it was, guys were just shooting out of there. Glad it was a little dry, but like the late 90s and the early 2000s is when, you know, a lot of guys started to come up out of the area. They touched a lot on DeMatha, you know, for Quinn and the Grand Brothers. And they did speak to Beasley, but I didn't see much about Taiwan. Mm-hmm. And it was like Eddie Bazin, Sam mm-hmm. Young, just, you know, other guys, yeah. other guys who were pros who was in the area around that time.
Yeah, I grew with Eddie.
Well, let me.
Devontae West.
Yeah.
Good.
Let me ask you this, DJ. You've been very popular around Prince George's County. Your name with regards to basketball. Is there any one player that you could think of who may not have made it out and gone to the levels that you thought that he would have gone to that no one knows of or no one speaks of?
Are we talking just PG County?
Yeah, just PG County.
Yeah, in the DC area, okay. If it's someone that's a legendary basketball player, playground basketball player. A guy that gave you trouble. Not gave you trouble, but you thought was really nice and thought would, ascend to the level that you have and other players from the area.
For sure. When I was younger and coming up and watching all the guys in the city play like at the Herb Bowl, mm-hmm. I thought Greg Jones was the dude.
Mm-hmm.
As far as even Mucci made it over him, I'm like, man, Greg's taller, Greg's a better shooter, Greg can pass. He just was exciting to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So the first time I ever heard of Steve Francis, right, somebody was like, somebody beat Greg Jones in one-on-one. And I'm like, man, no way. I'm like, they must have been like 6'6 or something, somebody that's tall and strong. They was like, nah, he Greg's same size. I'm like, somebody Greg beat him one-on-one? That's how highly I thought of Greg Jones. And they ended up being Steve Francis. But I always tell people, man, like when the pros would come to the city, Greg was paying all them dudes up. Like, it looked like it was effortless.
I heard about him. Actually, I did hear about him. So, like, growing up, where was your best run at, like, in the area?
Well, lots. I mean, because I grew up in my mom's mm-hmm. side is from Riverdale, mm-hmm. and my dad. Side is right at the street from Watts on 59th. So I live my life both places back and forth. So Watts was probably, I couldn't even, before I became a big name, I couldn't even be able to get on the court with Kurt Smith and all them guys that was down there. I was just a young dude.
At what point were you able to get on the court? And like, what was that feeling like? When you were able to get on the court and get consistent runs with those guys.
Well, even my Riverdale was tough to get on the court with the older guys. But once I got around my freshman year, and then like the dude around the guy around my way who could fly, he was like 6'4", and he was nice. Like me all the time, but damn, when I got like, I went back around Riverdale. I was dunking on this dude so crazy, it was like embarrassing. I'm like, man, this is like the dude that I thought was awesome. And then once I got to that height, because I kind of shot up, like still kept my hand doing jump shot, but I can dunk now. So all I really wanted to do was just dunk on everybody, and that happened like freshman year.
All right, when did you sprout up and get the height? Because for me, when growing up, I tried to sleep all summer to get taller. I just wanted to be 6'8". Like that was my goal, was to sleep in the summer. Like, when did you get tall?
From 8 to 9.
8 to 9. See, that was my dream, man.
When I really shut up.
And is that when you got that growth spurt from 8th to 9th grade, is that kind of when your national profile as a basketball player became brighter, where I guess a lot of college teams that were starting to scout you, or the AAU programs were starting to take notice of you in high school programs?
I say not really, because my first year at Blazensburg, as a freshman, I didn't play. I stayed back.
Okay.
I was just in gym class going crazy. And then that summer I was around Watts and Curtis Smith had introduced me to Curtis Malone.
Mm-hmm.
And from then on, like, Curtis put me in these AAU team. I didn't even know like basketball was that serious, where those guys were going out the city and playing against other guys and that they ranked these guys. I know none of that.
Mm.
So once I got my first few tournaments with Curtis, it just kind of blew up from there. I was going to be like 6'8", and I'm still a guard because I always played with grown men. I didn't grow up playing on basketball teams.
Mm.
So I didn't play I was just automatically started seeing this dude out here tall and dunking and shooting threes and handling the ball, and it blew up from there. It was like overnight.
So, DJ, did you play boys and girls basketball?
Huh?
Did you play boys and girls basketball at all? PG boys and girls basketball?
Play boys club basketball?
Yeah, did you ever
No. Okay. I never played under that.
Okay.
No. My rec center, we didn't have an indoor court. We had an outdoor court.
Yeah.
So one year, they tried to put together a team for us around Riverdale. It was a 1,500 team, and I was 12. And I played, but that was the only year we had a team, and we wasn't good or nothing like that. So I didn't grow up playing on no teams.
Hey, you bought a lot of run and shoot? Because I was surprised they didn't talk about the run and shoot enough in the documentary. And I know I agree with you in terms of, like, in an hour, it's so hard to put so much in it. But, like the run and shoot, like, what was your time balling at the run and shoot?
Yeah, running shoot was big. I mean, when they first started going up there, like, I was endeavoring. I still was playing. I was only coming home for a little bit. But then I got out of the league and I moved back home. I was in Bowie. Then I was able to spend more time up there and, you know, working up there with KD every day. And just all the guys around the area that they all they make pro, but they're with the big schools. And Jeff Green, it's all them guys. It was just so much talent. So many courts of basketball, but you know, the main court is the main court.
Mm-hmm.
You really got to put on that court, but everywhere you look, you're saying you can get some good games there.
And how serious you take your role? You mentioned some of the younger guys. How serious you take your role as a mentor in the area for some of this up and coming talent?
I just try to, you know, I've learned because them guys look up to me. It's different now than what it was when I was coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So they got different obstacles, but I just, you know, give them the game that I learned, and, you know, treat them all as my little brother.
Mm-hmm. Will, so you got a question?
No, the one question I do have for you, DJ, is what was that transition like for you, you know, just because you didn't play organized basketball as a youth, you know, then you played high school at AAU basketball, then one year at Cincinnati. What was that transition to the NBA like? You know, what was it like for you? Was it was the transition hard, or was it relatively easy for you to assimilate coming into the locker room with and playing basketball with grown men and getting paid to play basketball professionally?
Right. You mean as far as like on a skill level by not playing, or
like, just of all aspects, just, you know, from a skill level, then also okay. from the social level, right?
Right. Okay. As far as not growing up, not playing in boys and girls club, it kind of, I guess, helped me be tougher and helped me be able to play more like of a one-on-one game.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was is once the spotlight came on to Curtis, was preparing me to be a pro. So I'm just doing workouts. Like Coach Mike Brown, he was the Wizards coach on the Bernie Big Staff. I'm going to weight trainers. I'm going to work out with Mike Brown. And they teach me how to play without the ball in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went to NCI, I went to Cincinnati. Now I'm coming off screens. They kind of took the ball out of my hand. Before it was just one full set, let me go.
Mm-hmm.
So then I kind of learned to play without the ball. In Cincinnati, it was Kenyon's show. It wasn't my show. So when I got to Atlanta, well, the biggest adjustment was losing. everybody was cool, but I never lost so many games and not played.
Mm-hmm.
So that was new to me. It's like I know their plan for me was to bring me along slowly, kind of like the Raptors did with McGrady, and like how Kobe had to set the bench first before he was able to be a starter. That was their plan for me.
Mm-hmm.
It just so happened my accident came after my second year, but I didn't like that. I wanted to play right away. I'm seeing guys I've killed over and over again. They out there able to play and make their mistakes and, you know, learn on the fly. For me, they were kind of holding me back and we were getting my ass kicked, so I didn't like that.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of people sitting. I'm not a big fan of that. Like, if, especially when your team ain't that good, like, just play the young dude. What are you going to lose? Like, play the young dude. Let him rock. You know what I'm saying? But I want to go to Cincinnati.
Exactly.
I want to go to Cincinnati because I thought that mob was, like, was raw. Like, that squad you played with was raw. You, Kenya Martin, Kenny Statterfield.
For sure.
You know, and having Bobby Huggins as your coach. Like, you talk about that time playing in Cincinnati?
Oh, so, definitely. We thought we had... And we thought we would have won.
Mm-hmm.
And on this team, he came off the bench. He came off the bench. Michael, who was in the team the year before me and Kenny got there.
Mm-hmm.
He was drafted that year. He's the last pick to the Knicks. Mm-hmm. Had a great overseas career. So we had a whole bunch of pros on that team and played.
Hey, DJ, you there?
DJ, I was bullied today.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Yeah, you broke up. My bad. I don't know what's going on.
Good,
I said we had tough seniors, Canyon and Pete, them guys who were tough guys. Everybody was scared of them. And then you got the skilled guys, freshmen, could be inside the field. The guy was All-American.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so many whole holes was on us. But it was just hard to be on it so much when we winning. You know, every game by 20. But it is just unfortunate that our big boy, he went down. We was like trying to figure out, you know, stuff.
I thought that team was mean. It was, man. Like, Kenyon was on a whole different level. I was like, damn, they got DJ, too. Right. I was like, this team is on a, like, and then when I saw Kenny Satterfield for the first time, bruh. I was like, damn. I thought y'all win the national championship.
Right.
I thought y'all were winning it, to be honest with you.
Right. And Kenny was big to come in because Kenny had already been
mm-hmm.
And I was undecided because I was going to go straight to the league.
Mm-hmm.
And once I got around, I'm going to go to the other. Here, Kenny, you got to come here. You got to come here. And he's big and even recruiting me.
Mm-hmm. Nah, Kenyon was a dog, man. Kenyon was a real dude on the court. You could tell, you could tell in college and the NBA, like, dude was a real dude. So I have a question because I always feel like this area has lost a lot of talent, and you know, going elsewhere, going to, like, the other schools. Like, did Maryland go hard at you? Did Georgetown go hard at you, or were they like kind of BSing it?
Yeah, man, my boy, he talks about this all the time. A lot of teams stopped recruiting because they thought I was going straight to the league.
Okay.
Georgetown's for big man. If I was a singer, I would love to go to Georgetown.
Got you.
So Maryland was actually one of my last three schools.
Mm.
But it was just on the strength of it being in Maryland. But when they recruited me, was just bad.
Mm.
It was kind of like Gary ain't really want guys like me.
See, I knew it.
He wanted to have his senior. And guys that, so he could, he wanted to be able to AAU coaching, and he wanted one and done type guys. So his recruit, you know, me was really kind of embarrassing.
Mm.
And I'm pretty sure the same for everybody else because Maryland is right there, ACC school.
Mm-hmm.
He could have had all of us, like, had they really wanted us or act like they wanted us, but nobody did it. And it's kind of messed up.
Yeah, it is. All this talent. And not a
yeah.
single one of them won't go on.
Yeah, I always say, you know, Gary Williams, you know, because he won the NCAA championship, he'll have a Hall of Fame career. But the one, I guess, blip on his resume is the amount of talent that got out of this area that went to other schools, especially when Maryland is a top 15 school, and you know, it's a top 15 school in the country. Just from an academic standpoint. And then you played in the ACC.
Right.
Playing in the ACC during that time, you know, Maryland's in the Big East now, but playing in the ACC at that time, just about all of your games were on ESPN, right?
Yeah.
You know, especially if Maryland, if you're a program that's ranked, you know, in the top 25. So I just always thought it was crazy that none of the guys that we think of who are from this area who made it big ever attended Maryland.
Oh, you didn't even have to recruit out of the area. It doesn't mean to keep Bogan, Kevin Lied, Bob Brown. Like, just the guys are there. You see, going to Maryland, and then you get KD and Tywan Lawson, James Beasley. There's so many guys. Because they won more championships.
Yeah, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, I never understood that. That's one of the things. Yeah, that's one of the things that always blew my mind. Just the amount of talent, basketball talent, that's in PG County, in their backyard, literally less than 10 miles away from the campus, 10 to 15 miles away from the campus. And none of that talent ever went to Maryland. That's one of the things that always perplexed me.
And we got three point guards that won. Maybe four that won the national championship with ACC schools. Nolan won one, and Duke, Quinn won at Duke. Taiwan won at North Carolina, and I think Nate Britt lost. So can Nate Britt win and lose one?
Who, Britt?
I'm not sure. I know they never beat them. I don't know if they won one, though, but.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Man. Was he on that squad with, when Carolina won, they won right after Nova, right? Right after they lost to Nova, right? Didn't Carolina win right after they lost
to Nova? Yeah, they won
I think you're right. Okay, I think you're right. I think you're right. You know what I mean? But now I'm
all PG County point guards. ACC championship.
It's crazy, man. Like, even Jeff Green in Northwestern, you're like, you're right there.
Yeah.
Like, you know, some real stuff. Yeah, like,
at least Jeff went to Georgetown.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
But what I always tell Chris Wright, and all three, I'm like, man, it's shot y'all when they went to Georgetown.
I know.
Like, because them two dudes was pro dudes, you know what I'm saying? And if they'd have went somewhere else where they not running that Princeton offense and let them guys,
because of the difference
for them.
Bruh, I'm a Hoya fan. I grew up a Hoya fan. I say that all the time. I tell people, like, it's like Chris Wright, Austin Freeman. And it, to me, it's like when I look at Austin Freeman being a 2-3, like, I just felt like that dude should be in the NBA. Like, hands down, like, he should be in the NBA. There's no way that he should not be in the NBA. And I felt like he went somewhere else. Like, if he went to, say, an ACC school, he'd be in the league. Hands down, he'd be in the league. You know what I mean?
For sure. And I hope Austin, I mean, every summer, even to this day, I mean, he still gets you a bucket.
I know. Like, he was a talented dude, real talented dude. Hey, DJ, man, thanks for being on, man. Is there anything you would like to add before we let you go?
Nah, man. Whatever you guys have to add, I'm here to talk, but, you know, I'm good.
All right, man.
Everybody stay safe out there, man.
Man, DJ, we appreciate you being on, man. I know, like Will said, I know you're a busy guy. Appreciate you jumping on, man.
Appreciate
your
time,
brother.
Thank you.
All right,
brother. All right, man. Stay blessed and safe. All right, man. That's DeMar Johnson, DJ, man. You heard it here at Urban Sports. And we're gonna do this. We're supposed to have Mike Sweeney next week, Will T.
Oh, okay.
So we
50-50 for next week. You 50-50?
Okay. I appreciate you letting me know. It's all good. 50-50. It's all good though. We doing it though. PG Hoopers, man. We trying for PG. Not trying to. I'm trying to add on to the momentum, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, we've got all this good buzz with the documentary. I want to, like, you know, add on to the momentum. Do my part. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, it's good. I mean, I think it's good that, you know, the listening audience gets an opportunity to hear, you know, some of the guys, you know, to hear from some of the guys who were in the documentary, yes. but didn't have a lot of airtime.
Yeah, I'm glad.
So I think that's good.
That's what I want to do. I'm trying to get Walt Williams. That's the goal. But yeah, I want to get those guys. He mentioned Ed Bastin. I'm trying to get Ed on the show. Like, I want to get the dudes that were featured, like, the airtime. You know what I'm saying? Especially like DJ. You know, DJ had so many of the guys that people talk about today, like, looked up to him. Just let you know his impact. In the area back then, when we were hooping and we were watching folks in our age bracket ball, you know what I'm saying? So, like, trying to get DJ, like, the props.
He does deserve it. You know, he, you know, in the 2000 draft, I think he was the sixth overall pick.
Yeah.
So, you know, 1 year at Cincinnati. So there was a long period of time before we produced a certified star out of this area, but. He was a McDonald's All-American, a Parade All-American. He had the credentials and, you know, and he had the game to back it up.
Yeah, definitely. All right, man. Do we think Drew Brees' apology was sincere? We'll let you know after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, myself, Wole. Ray Jeezy is out. I'm putting Will T on the line right now. Will T's on. You know what I'm saying? So last week, Will T, during the fight for equality, New Orleans Saints QB, Drew Brees, doubled down on his stance about kneeling during the anthem. He said he would never agree with the NFL players who knelt during the national anthem to protest police brutality. Here's the quote he used. "I will never agree with anybody disrespecting the flag of the United States of America, of our country." A bunch of players got on him. They gave him the business. And now he apologized. Your thoughts on the whole Drew Brees anthem situation?
I'm a firm believer of what you say the first time is probably the most authentic reaction and how you feel in that moment. Mm-hmm. And I think just to give the context, if you went back and you actually listened to the interview, which was on Yahoo Finance, the Yahoo Finance channel, he really didn't have to double down on his stance based off of the question that the interviewer asked him. He chose to go in that direction with that answer.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that he could have potentially totally avoided. So that was what was sincerely in his heart. That's one. Two, Drew Brees, are you just totally tone deaf on what's going on in the world at that point during the interview? At that point, I think that it was second or third day of protest around, not only in the country, but around the world. And people protesting the death of George Floyd. And, you couple that with what Colin Kaepernick's original reason why he protested was exactly for that. And you double down on, I never agree with any player, anyone disrespecting the flag. Sir, you're totally tone deaf. You didn't even address what was the reason for Colin Kaepernick deciding to protest, right?
Yeah.
I think that's the thing that made people so mad. And that's one point. And then the second point is, you play in the locker room, let me go back a little bit. I think all of us have heard those chants by Drew Brees before the start of the game.
Yeah,
right?
Everybody hype, yeah.
Where he gets everyone hype. Mm-hmm. He speaks of, all of us are brothers. This is a brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
Sir, how can you be in a locker room with people you call your brothers, you go to war with on a, every Sunday and not get a full grasp, a full understanding of what their reason was, a people reason was for kneeling in protest. I was just totally dumbfounded by it. And to answer your question, no, I don't believe his apology was sincere.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, it's hard, right, to take his apology for like, as being sincere when you know what I mean? When people in the whole league was getting on you, got LeBron James in a whole different league getting on you, then finally the following day you come out with the apology. You know what I'm saying? Then you try to double down on your apology and have a comment to the President of the United States saying like, nah, this wasn't about the flag, this is about what's going on in the black community and brutality and this, that, and the other. And it's like, when you look at it, you know, and I always want to give somebody the benefit. Like, I always feel like I'm a believer in forgiveness. I like to give people the opportunity to, you know what I'm saying, state their case or whatnot. But, you know what I mean? I don't know if you truly mean it. You know what I'm saying? Like, because at the end of the day, you had an opportunity way back to understand the situation. Like, when you came out and said initially before what happened to Mr. George Floyd, before this had this issue even occurred, back when this started, when Cap was kneeling, you had an opportunity back then to be educated, right? So, and then after being educated, you could have apologized back then, but you didn't. Because it's the same message. The message hasn't changed, right? You know what I'm saying? The message has not changed. It's been the same message. So why now do you feel that, you know what, I was wrong? Like, why? Because everybody got on you? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's my thing. It's not a, go ahead, Will T. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. No, my apologies.
You're good. Go ahead.
No, it's kind of that groupthink mentality, right? Mm-hmm. It's, you know, you say something, then everyone attacks you or they tell you you're wrong, and then you go out and apology. You apologize. What I really want to understand is, you know, one, I want to understand Drew Brees' heart when it comes, you know, with regards to the subject mm-hmm. matter. Two, is it that you're truly, sincerely sorry for what you said and your ignorance about the subject matter? Or is it that you just felt the avalanche of pressure from the players in your locker room and also everyone else in the public to apologize?
Yeah, I just
and that's something
yeah.
we'll never know. We'll never know.
Yeah.
But that's why it's important at this time, you know, at this inflection point at this in our country, for those who are ignorant on the subject to just shut the hell up and listen and
exactly.
talk to people and get a better level of understanding, right? Like, there are certain things that I have no knowledge of, and I try not to speak upon those things, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are certain things I have no knowledge of. I try not to speak upon those things. But what I do is I take the time to read,
yeah.
for one. And two, I also seek out people who are knowledgeable about those situations, who lived through those experiences. And I have a conversation. Now, we may not always agree.
Yeah.
At the end of that conversation, but I can walk away saying, hey, I've had dialogue with someone about that subject matter. Let me go talk to someone else and see maybe if I'm just totally not seeing that, you know, I'm not seeing this from every angle.
But isn't that the issue, though, right? Like, you play in the National Football League, you play with a bunch of black folks, African Americans, whatever term you want to use. I use black folks, I don't care. All right, you play with a bunch of black folks. You have that. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you have that in your pocket. You can get educated. You can ask the person to your right, hey, all right, man, like, okay, like, I respect, like, the reason why I'm doing it is paying homage to, you know, our fallen soldiers and this country, right? That's why I'm doing it. Like, I have my relatives that fought in the war. Like, boom. Like, for this current situation, he came out look acting as if he never had this discussion. You play with Kamara. You play with Thomas. I'm sure they talked to you before.
I'm sure you probably are going to get upset that I say this, but I don't care. It's coming from the heart.
Go ahead.
It just goes to show white privilege.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's a perfect example of white privilege, right? If you hear this statement, he talks about what the flag means to him, right? What it means to you. That flag means something different to every individual.
Yeah, exactly.
In America. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Your grandfathers and also my grandfathers, for our constitutional rights and our civil liberties, for us to peacefully protest.
Mm-hmm.
No one is different. No one quietly protested and took a knee.
Mm-hmm. No,
he was quiet about it.
Yeah.
He was quiet about taking his knee. Taking a knee at least for 3 weeks until somebody asked him about it.
Yeah, and right? Yeah, I'm with you. Go ahead, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, you know, it hurts me to hear someone say for them to project what the flag means to them and think it should mean the same thing for everyone else, right?
Yeah. You should, yeah.
You know, like, I love red velvet cake. Red velvet cake doesn't mean the same thing to everyone else.
Real talk.
Sorry, it
doesn't. You're right.
I'm not going to get upset about it.
Yeah.
But what I will do is I'll say, Wally, I love red velvet cake. Why you don't like red velvet cake?
I'll ask the question. I like red velvet cake.
It's on it.
Yeah.
I'll ask them the question. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the only way we're going to truly move forward together as one in this country.
Mm.
Is if we have those difficult conversations and we ask those questions.
Definitely.
Some folk are going to be very uncomfortable during those conversations.
Oh, very.
But you have to be open and you have to be honest with it.
Yeah.
And you have to know that, and you can't be defensive.
Yeah.
You just can't be, you know, it's just, you know, I hope this is a point in Drew Brees' life where he decides to, you know, take this and possibly learn more about, you know, some of the struggles of African Americans, especially when it comes to dealing with police and other injustices in their communities or in their life. But I'm just going to be honest with you. I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm like, to me, like, I have a lot of doubt when it comes to Drew Brees. I'm not going to lie to you. But I had it initially, though. I'm not surprised. I just feel like, you know, I think it was articulated back then with Cap, you know, when Cap initially started it. So I don't see the difference. And this is, I guess, my problem with the whole situation. I don't see a difference about what's happening now to what Cap was talking about in the beginning. You know what I'm saying? Like, so if you didn't understand it, what's making you understand it now? You know what I'm saying, Will? Like, I know the reason, but I'm saying, like, what's making you understand it now? Cap was saying the same thing back then. Your teammates.
Nothing. The only thing that's going to make him understand it is the avalanche of criticism
of
he received.
Of course.
That's the only thing that's changed.
That's the thing.
Only thing that's changed.
And that's my issue. That is my issue. Because then we take it. Then we have to look at it for what it is. It's not genuine. You know what I mean? And that's my problem with it. On Twitter, my man Pat tweeted about the whole Drew Brees situation. You know, I asked, what could Drew Brees do to make it right? And Pat said, nothing. No, he's going to have to earn this one over time. Yeah.
Earn.
I don't even know if he can.
I'm just going to be honest with you. Why does he have to earn this? This is probably going to be his last year in the NFL.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He already has a job lined up at NBC calling games as an analyst.
Mm-hmm.
That it's been reported. So it's not he has to earn. He has to lose something to understand.
True.
Most people, you know, when I was younger, hot stoves, I always used to put my finger by the stove just playing.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother would tell me, you know, my mother told me like two or three times, don't put your hand by the stove. Eventually, you're going to burn yourself. After the second or third time her seeing me putting my hand by the stove, she stopped telling me. And then you know what? I got bold one day. I put my hand on a hot-ass stove. And I burned myself. And then that's when I learned. You know, I had to
you had to feel the pain.
I had to find out that hard. Yeah, I had to feel the pain. I had to find out that hard lesson. And I never put my hand by a stove again. Maybe that's something that it has to happen to some individuals for them to really wake up and understand what's going on.
All right, so I have a question, and, you know, because this kind of rubbed me the wrong way, too, and I want to get your opinion about it. All right, so his teammate and top wide receiver, Michael Thomas, accepted his apology after going in on Drew Brees, right? He was going in on him on social media prior to the apology. If Brees was a backup QB like Case Hill, do you think he accepts the apology?
I don't know, because I don't know the relationship between Michael Thomas and Taysom Hill, and I don't know the relationship of Drew Brees and Michael Thomas, right? I will say the New Orleans Saints have an incredible opportunity this year. If we're just projecting, right, yeah, the upcoming NFL season, the New Orleans Saints have an incredible opportunity this year, and that is to win a Super Bowl. Right, mm-hmm. They're probably one of the top four teams in the NFC at this point. This is something that if you didn't get alignment with and move past as a not only as a team but as an organization, it could potentially hurt your Super Bowl chances.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty sure someone in that organization told those guys, "All right, we're gonna have this powwow session. But ultimately, before we leave out of this powwow, you know, once we leave out of this session, we will all agree that anything we have to say to the media will be we've forgiven Drew and we're moving forward."
We'll see.
I'm pretty sure that message was echoed to the players during the meeting.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's gonna be tough for Drew, man. Let's keep it a buck. It's gonna be tough for Drew. Like, you look at yourself, like you said, Will T, man, everybody was like, Drew Brees, like when Drew Brees did like the pregame stuff, man, you get folks hype. Teammates got all hype, and you can see it as a fan, or as a fan of football, you would get hype, right? It's like Ray Lewis leading this team to war, right? So it's like, how is he going to get those dudes back? You know what I'm saying? How is he going to get those dudes back? It's the dudes who are against what he said. You know what I'm saying? How is he going to get those dudes back? So, I mean.
And then I'll take it a step further. I'm pretty sure if I remember it correctly, at one point Drew Brees took a knee during the national anthem.
He did.
So, I mean,
oh man, you know,
was that an act of sincerity?
Man, like what you just say, man. It's sometimes you just gotta look at things for what it is, man. And the evidence doesn't lie. If you do something twice, it says a lot about who you are. All right, he gets. They go in on him, right, about what he said. Then what does he do? He doubles down. He apologizes, right? He apologizes to the, you know, to on social media. Then he doubles down and he goes against the president on, I think, on Twitter or Instagram, one or the other. And on Twitter, I'm sure it's Twitter. Then, like, that's go back, right? It's big in terms of kneeling and whatnot. He kneels because, again, it's the outcry. It's the outcry of kneeling. So he kneels. I'm just saying, like, obviously, is it more PR than anything? It could be more PR than anything, and that's my issue.
I think it's more. That's why, you know, I personally, it's not incumbent upon me to forgive him. I'm not in that locker room. I don't have to deal with injuries on a day to day basis.
Yeah.
But those guys, his teammates, who have knelt and who will kneel.
Mm-hmm.
In this upcoming season, there needs to be some type of understanding and resolution for this team to go forward.
Yeah, and
or to tell him, to tear him apart.
Yeah, and they know him personally. They know what's in his heart. I mean, or they have an idea what's in his heart. So they know Drew Brees better than I always use that. When I'm discussing this Drew Brees situation, I've been saying, like, I don't know Drew Brees personally. I'm not a friend of Drew Brees, so I don't know what's in his heart. I don't know the discussions that he has with his teammates. They know him better than I can only speak as an outsider, right? We can only speak as outsiders. So, but from what I'm looking at, it doesn't look right. But he may tell you something totally different, and you may, and because of your relationship with him, you know, because you know him, that he's telling the truth. And you believe him, and you feel that he's really apologetic, and that's fine. All right, I don't know him like that, so I from what I'm looking at, I don't see it, but I could be wrong.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? All right,
man. We both could have this totally wrong.
Yeah, we both could. All right, the NBA is coming back. We'll discuss this after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You did.
Deuces.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Myself, Wole, Will T, Ray Jeezy is out. I'm plugging in Will T in because, as you all know, we are doing the social distancing show. So because we believe in social distancing. All right. I know everybody hype. It is what it is. The NBA has decided to bring back the season. The goal is for the season to start July 31st. All games will be held in Orlando, Disney World. It's a Disneyland, either or. Do you agree with the move to have the NBA come back? Restart, excuse me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the way that Adam Silver has worked with the NBA Players Association to get buy-in and also to be a true partnership on what's the best direction to take to decide if there's a season. And if there's a season, how do we go about bringing basketball back the most safe in the safest way? Just goes to show his leadership, right? To me, Adam Silver is the best leader in all of North American sports, hands down, plain and simple, from a commissioner standpoint.
No, he's a beast. He's a beast.
Yeah, having said that, I'm extremely excited, man. I would have thought that baseball would have figured it out first and gotten back on the field, but it's baseball.
Really?
There's a reason why it's dramatically lost the level of popularity that it's once had.
Hmm.
You know, baseball, you know, you had opportunity to come back, and I don't want to make this a segment about what baseball hasn't done right.
Yeah.
But I'll just say this. Baseball, you had an opportunity to be the only major North American sport.
Very good point. For ratings, you're right.
On TV, mm-hmm. at a point where everyone wanted to play sports, and you blew it. So that's all I say about baseball, and I'll go back to basketball. I'm definitely excited to, you know, for them to have to bring back the 22 teams and us to get the playoffs started. The NBA is approaching in the right way by having an almost month long training camp for the players to get back in shape, get their conditioning, and also to set up the Disney Sports Complex facilities to set up for the rest of the season in the playoffs. So I'm excited that we'll have meaningful NBA basketball in July and August.
Man,
this is usually a very slow time of the year.
It is. I mean, as a fan, I guess, you know, because having something to watch, right? It's exciting. But but as an individual who understands like the grind and the haters out there in the world with basketball players, man, I just think they should scrap this season, man. I can already see the storylines, man, with certain people, and I wouldn't be a fan of it, because either way you won't be able to win. This is going to be an asterisk ass season, you know what I mean? Like, whoever wins, but for some individuals who may win it, if this particular person does win it, oh my, the dude can't win either which way. If he wins it, asterisk. If he loses, oh, he lost another chance. He lost another NBA Finals. You know what I'm talking about, LeBron. So it's like, in my mind, it's like, why even have this kind of season knowing the hate is going to be real regardless?
I mean, it's bigger than LeBron. is bigger than LeBron. It's about crowning the champions for this season. Like, you don't want it to, you know, the I'll say this, the biggest thing from an economic standpoint is you have to finish the season this season for the salary cap in the future seasons coming that's ahead of us. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't finish out this season, then the salary cap dramatically shrinks mm-hmm. for the players over the next 2 or 3 years, and which is something you don't need, right? Especially yeah. with those rookies coming into the league.
Yeah, that's true.
You need to finish out this season. It's going to be exciting, in my opinion, even, you know, and I'm interested to see what the NBA does, ways to make the game, you know, to bring the fans into the game a little bit more
uh-huh.
Without an audience there.
Yeah.
I think Adam Silver and the NBA Players Association are extremely creative, and they'll find a way to keep it engaging for us without the fans there.
They'll probably have players, you know, watching the game and cheer. They were doing that with wrestling. They'll have wrestlers in the audience cheering. They'll probably have players in the audience cheering. I mean, I'm excited as a basketball fan. You know, as a dude who loves basketball at its purest form, just to have something to watch, right? You know what I'm saying? I've been watching Hardwood Classics and college basketball classic games, so I guess I'll get to see something live. But I'm just not a fan of like what's going to happen, because even Tim Duncan, when he won his first championship with the against the Knicks, I think they even, you know, for a while it was called an asterisk season. You know what I'm saying? So I just have an issue with people demeaning, you know, a championship, because at the end of the day, they're all playing this at a level playing field, right? So for anybody to really call it an asterisk season, shouldn't be, you know, really shouldn't be stated. But you know, it's going to happen. You know what I'm saying? It's going to happen. So it is what it is. You know, with this, you mentioned the format, it's 22 games. I mean, 22 teams, excuse me. The Wizards make it in. Like, are you a fan of this format? The Wizards can make the playoffs.
Nope. If you're the Wizards, take the lottery pick, build for the future. Look, man, as much as people, I'm not going to say the word because I don't want you to get up. As much as people poo-pooed on Sam Hinkie,
my man,
and what he did in Philadelphia.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It was good work.
I'm not saying the Wizards need to tank, but I'm saying if there's an opposite, what good are you going to – okay, you'll be the number one seed, right? I mean the number eight seed. Let's say hypothetically you get the number eight seed.
Mm-hmm.
Then you'll play either Toronto or Milwaukee. I think I believe that Toronto was number one in the East when we stopped.
I gotta check that.
I could be mistaken.
I thought it was Milwaukee. Yeah. Let me check. I thought it was Milwaukee.
Well, excuse me, it's Milwaukee. Yeah, Milwaukee was number one in the East. Once the season was ceased.
Mm-hmm.
You really think what benefit does it give you?
They ain't being honest.
To play the Milwaukee Bucks and get swept.
Yeah. It's not beating Giannis. Don't matter. They're not beating Giannis. This team
beating Giannis.
I mean, it's cool to tank. You know what I'm saying? If you have nothing to do, I mean, if you're not going to, like, do – I mean, I'm going to say it's cool to tank, but you know what I mean. Like, in this situation, there's no real bonus to get into the postseason if you're the Wizards, especially when you're under 500 teams. Not like you're – you know what I'm saying? Like, you're chasing 500. You know what I'm saying? Or you're a couple games – you're like, you want to be a couple games over 500. This team doesn't have a chance to be over 500. So it's not like you're getting some type of – reward for like making the postseason. Like you're making a postseason being a bad team. Like that doesn't
You don't even have a legitimate shot to win
most likely a game. You're
stop
right
it, man.
A game. And yeah, like yeah. Nothing wrong with the lottery. Just go ahead, get ready for the lottery, man. It's nothing wrong with that. I like the lottery.
Yeah,
the Bucks,
take the pick man.
Add to John Wall coming back. All right, man. So I want to talk about this HBCU, you know, thing. We got to rush this segment out since we the show's about to close. All right. So recently, top basketball recruit Mikey Williams out of California talked about going to an HBCU to a hoop. How game changing would that move be?
Look, it would make a difference. It would make a small ripple, right?
Mm-hmm.
Within the, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it would make a small ripple, but it wouldn't. I don't think it would be ultimately game changing.
Yeah.
Unless Mikey Williams is the number one overall prospect
Well, he's 15. He could be. He could be with by the time.
I mean, if he turns out to be the number one overall prospect, then yes, it will be game changing. But right now, you know, with the potential of the NBA getting rid of the one and done, we don't even know if he will go to college. Right? Yeah. He's considering it, but you know, if he actually goes to a HBCU, it would be dope. It would be dope. I'm not gonna lie. It would be dope. Both of us graduated from HBCUs, so it would be dope. It would be dope to see young African American man, one of the best players in
the country,
in college basketball, playing for HBCU.
I think it'd be awesome, man. Because like, could you imagine? You know, and the thing that would make it game changing, like to your point, Will T, is that if he got a couple other folks to ride with him, you know what I'm saying? Like to go in that same squad with him, like. Could be iconic, like the Fab Five. You dig what I'm saying? Like, could you imagine the Fab Five all went to like Howard? You know what I mean? Like,
that would be interesting. But you would have to, in order for it to truly be a game changer, he couldn't just be the only one. It would have to be guys from class after class after class who are in the top 10, top 15, top 50 recruits in America.
Yeah.
Starting to go to HBCU.
But you got to start it, though, right? Right? You got to make it cool. You got to make it hip. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. Yeah. Like if Melo went to Morgan State, you dig what I'm saying? Or he went to Coppin. You know what I mean? It would have been bananas. It would have been crazy. Like, that's my thing. Like, Allen Iverson, if he didn't go to Georgetown, he went to Hampton. You know what I'm saying? It's game changing because now you got that dude that and then he's in the league now. You like, this dude went to he went to a MEAC school. He went to another HBCU school. Like he went, dang, like, all right, shoot. I'm gonna try it out. I'm gonna do it. You know what I mean? I just think it would be hip, man. Like we used to make jokes all the time. LeBron James, like you and me, give LeBron James anything he wants. Bring him to make him spend one year in college. You know what I'm saying? Like,
and because speak about getting anything. Speak about it when it occurs. I'm interested to hear how it goes. Zion Williamson, he's been subpoenaed to appear in court.
Yeah. You know what annoys me? You know what's so funny about that, though? Real talk. And this is the issue to me. If you do get it's gonna all play its part together in terms of how I break this down. Like, if an HBCU got say a player like Zion, use Zion as an example. The issue with that is that they're gonna be investigated right off the bat. Like, and they're probably gonna get caught. Whatever, probably get caught. It's almost like Memphis. Look at Memphis and Penny Hardaway, right? Wiseman. Look how much crap they put Wiseman under, right? Think about it, right? So for that season, Zion went to Duke. Everybody pretty much knows what probably happened is for Duke to get Zion and the dude played for the Knicks. I'm sorry, lefty. Who plays?
RJ Barrett.
All right, thank you, RJ. Oh, yeah, Barrett. Everybody knows that they didn't just go to Duke, you know, just because. I mean, obviously, there was some incentive. But look how long it took this situation to be ironed out. You dig what I'm saying? Like, for the NCAA to attack this situation. Like, but they were quick with Wiseman and Penny. They're quick. Like, real quick. So that's my thing. Like, if an HBCU gets a player of that caliber, they're automatically under the microscope, which is different from going to a big school.
Yep. I'll give you the last word, man, because it's time for us to get out of here.
You know it, my man. All right, man, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Want to thank DJ for being on the show. Much appreciated. Great show as always. Will T, you got anything you want to say?
Nah, man, just everyone stay safe. And also, everyone, let's start to have these conversations. So we can move forward, and we got to continue to exert our power at the polls, and also our economic power as an African American community for us to affect to get the change that we want.
You heard it. So young men, go to HBCUs. All right, you've been listening. Anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
Thank you.
You dig?
Deuces.
Hey, Mega, lead us out, big homie.